Remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself and the results blew my mind. I was very wrong. If you remember, I was worried about my brain and not my cardiovascular health. And it turns out my brain's fine, but my cardiovascular health needs work. But luckily, my biological age was really right on track with my actual age, which is good because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%. That's a big deal, and it's completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and the environment you're in, which means that you have a lot of control over it. The True Age test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, and it was eye-opening. And I will say, I definitely picked up the workouts after I learned that my cardiovascular health isn't as good as I thought it was. The test itself was super easy and convenient. I did it from home, and it was just a quick, painless finger prick that I made Ethan do because I was too scared. You send it off in a tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code ATTWG to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use ATTWG at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. We sleep better when we sleep cool. As the weather is getting warmer, staying cool while we sleep will be top of mind. Organic and natural bedding sleeps cooler than cheaper synthetic alternatives, and they last longer too. A fresh season calls for a fresh start, and that includes your bed. From seriously soft organic cotton sheets to breathable silk and luxurious down duvets, Avocado Green's bedding makes it easy to reset your space sustainably. Perfect for hot sleepers in warmer months, Avocado Green sheets and duvet inserts are naturally breathable and help regulate temperature, so you sleep cool, dry, and comfortable all night long. Avocado bedding is thoughtfully designed and expertly crafted for lasting durability. From reinforced stitching to premium long staple organic fibers, every detail is made to stand the test of time, wash after wash, season after season. We sleep better when we sleep cool, so head to avocadomattress.com today to save 10% on all bedding and 50% on clearance bedding. Avocado, dream of better. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, you can build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic, personalized closet. And the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. So I've been using Armoire, and I'm actually wearing one of their shirts right now as I'm recording this, and it's a great idea. You don't have to commit to buying the clothes, but you can really start to explore your own personal style. Like if there's a trend or something that you've been wanting to maybe try but not commit to, this is absolutely perfect. Because if you don't like it, you just put it back in the bag and get something else. Because we've all been there. You open your closet, and even though it's packed, you feel like you have nothing to wear. And with Armoire, that's a thing of the past. They make it effortless for all women to turn heads with stylish everyday looks. You can rent high-quality designer clothing for any occasion, and it's all tailored to your personal style. Plus, you don't have to do laundry, and you don't have to go shopping. It truly could not be any easier. And right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month, which is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/ATTWG. That's armoire.style, ARMOIRE, .style/ATTWG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
Hi there, I'm Zach Williams, the host of the true crime show Compulsion. We're a show that strives to bring new, never-before-heard information to even the most seasoned podcast listener. We try to cover lesser-known cases that don't get much coverage. For example, the case of Bob Cassily, an eccentric sculptor whose suspicious death by bulldozer accident was the least interesting thing about him. But we do cover some cases that everyone knows, like the boys from Yuba City, if we can find local sources that have new information. We also aren't afraid to cover the cases that cast the true crime community in a less flattering light, where victims and family members get harassed by armchair detectives online. And we discuss the way social media is shaping the true crime world today. If you want a show that does more than read you the Wikipedia page, check out Compulsion today.
On December 7th, 2003, a woman gets into a car that no one in her family had ever seen before. Everything seemed normal, but then she was never seen again. Or was she? The case of LaQuanta Riley has baffled her family and authorities in Montgomery, Alabama for nearly two decades. Did something tragic happen to the bright, bubbly college student? Or did she simply decide to take a different path in life? A mysterious voicemail and a potential sighting provide few answers, but even more questions. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of LaQuanta Riley. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone.
So right away, I'm already skeptical.
Of what? Me?
No. So another case where somebody possibly like picked up and started a new life.
Oh, are you referring to Robert Hoagie Hoagland?
Yeah, and Daniel Ewan. You know, it seems like there's a lot of cases where the theory is that somebody picked up and started a new life somewhere.
True, but that's the problem with these missing persons cases when it's an adult, because like that's always an option, you know? Like adults do that sometimes.
But how is there some underground shop where people are going to get like alternate identities made for them and stuff?
Like that's really my question too. Like because you know, whenever you would read crime stories and stories about this stuff, like in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, I mean, even up to like the 90s and 2000s, it was a lot easier because they would get the birth certificate of like somebody who died.
Right.
And then they would go apply for a social security card and, et cetera, exactly. Et cetera. And then they could just build a whole new identity. But I think there are just too many like systems in place to
there's
not.
Facial recognition software. I mean, not necessarily DNA, but I mean DNA.
I know it's so strange to me. So like if anybody knows how to get a new identity, please
don't
email
reach
me.
Out to her.
No, definitely reach out to me.
She definitely is going to use it to create her own new identity.
Yes.
And then you'll just be listening to me on this podcast. And since she does all the work, it would just basically be me talking, saying, I wonder where my wife is.
Okay. Oh, man, it'll be the next serial.
Yeah.
All right. So
with a lot less evidence.
Okay. So let's get to this week's actual case. This week, we are heading down to Montgomery, Alabama for a case that needs some new life breathed into it. We've talked about the issues surrounding missing people of color, especially we've been talking about this recently. And this story seems to be an example of just that. There are definitely people out there who are tangentially involved in this who can probably do a lot to shed light on this mystery that has been going on for nearly 20 years. So, like, I'm hoping that, you know, maybe this might help jog some memories or help, you know, people pressure other people in their lives to kind of come forward and say something.
Yeah, for sure.
LaQuantia Nichelle Riley was born on February 26, 1984, to Pamela Riley. Pam was only 16 when LaQuantia was born, so the baby went to live with her aunt, Katie Smith, so like Pam's sister, who was a little older and a little more established in life. But this isn't one of those weird situations where, like, she got shipped off and, you know, her sister was her mother. You know, there was nothing weird like that. It was always above board. And LaQuantia maintained a close relationship with her mother and the rest of her family while growing up. It just seems like this was a better, you know, situation for everyone.
Yeah.
Pam went on to have five other children after LaQuantia, four boys and a girl. But tragedy would strike the Riley family when Pam's youngest child and only other daughter passed away in 1996. Huh. Despite the turmoil, LaQuantia was a bright, happy child. She was smart and received excellent grades, even being named valedictorian of her eighth grade class. She apparently like got up and gave a speech at their middle school graduation, and it sounds very cute.
Who has a middle school graduation?
A lot of people had an elementary school graduation.
It has to be something with the South.
I don't know, maybe.
I had one graduation.
Our kids would have had a fifth grade graduation if it weren't for the pandemic.
And we're in the South.
Yeah, well, so there you go.
I didn't grow up in the South.
Her academic success continued in high school, where she played clarinet in the school band and earned grades that were good enough to earn a full academic scholarship.
Wow.
I know. Very impressive. In 2002, she graduated with honors from Rudan High School in Stone Mountain, Georgia, and headed off to college, ready to start her life.
So they had moved from Alabama to Georgia?
See, I don't know. I believe so. I think the family is originally from Alabama.
Okay.
But yes, like she went to high school in Georgia. I don't know if she spent her entire childhood in Georgia or exactly what that timeline was. But yes, she graduated high school in Stone Mountain, Georgia, which, by the way, is where Donald Glover is from.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find where she lived her freshman year or even what college she attended, but she lived in Eufaula, Alabama. Her sophomore year, which was the 2003-2004 school year, she decided to get an apartment off campus with a friend from high school. But as often happens in situations like this, there was some sort of argument. Hmm. Apparently, LaQuantia didn't elaborate on the cause of the rift between her and her roommate, but it was bad enough that LaQuantia decided to move out. And again, this is pretty early in the school year, like only about halfway through the first semester. So I have to imagine that this was a pretty big argument, you know, because one, it couldn't have been something that had been going on for too long because they hadn't been living together for all that long.
Sure.
And two, I mean, it would stand to reason that LaQuantia would either have to keep paying rent or break her lease. And both of those are bad, you know, situations if this argument was like over dirty dishes or, you know, eating food that was labeled with the other roommate's name or any of those other typical kind of roommate problems.
And you said they didn't know each other?
No, they did. They did. They were friends beforehand. So it has to have been something big.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, I mean, no clue. I couldn't even begin to imagine. And nobody, it sounds like nobody in her family really knew what the argument was about either. So it sounds like LaQuantia went home for Thanksgiving break and just kind of stayed there. By this time, her aunt, Katie Smith, had moved from Georgia to Montgomery, Alabama, and lived just 3 miles down the road from her sister and LaQuantia's mother, Pam. So, like, the whole family was kind of back together
back in
Montgomery.
That same region, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this move probably informed LaQuantia's college choice, or vice versa, because Eufaula was only about 70 miles from Montgomery, but like Eufaula was about 180 miles away from Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Thanksgiving was a little late that year, falling on November 27th. So LaQuantia had only been home for about a week before she decided to go back to Eufaula to get some of her things on December 5th. It's not clear how she got to her old apartment because it doesn't sound like she had a car.
Okay.
But later that day, she called her mother from Eufaula and sounded upset. She asked Pam to come pick her up, but Pam wasn't able to. And I find it interesting that this isn't really elaborated on, given that it's only 2 days before LaQuanta's disappearance.
Why she was upset?
Well, why she was upset and how she even got to Eufaula in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know how she made the 70-plus mile trip to her apartment. And after her mother couldn't come get her, everything I read just said that she made other arrangements and was able to get back to her aunt's house in Montgomery.
Maybe a bus service?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But I just think that, you know, again, anybody's movements in the days leading up to their disappearance,
should
I think
be
are
tracked.
Yeah, and are really important.
Absolutely.
And trying to figure out where they went. And this is, like I said, 2 days before she went missing.
Yeah, and especially when there's, you know, background of a heated argument with a friend.
Right, exactly. With a roommate. Yeah, and she was upset. Like the last time her mom talks to her, she's upset.
Yeah.
And we know that her aunt didn't pick her up because her aunt was back in Stone Mountain, like visiting family. And, you know, it might be nothing, but like I said, it just does feel relevant to me that possibly one or more people helped out LaQuanta by making this relatively long trip. I mean, it's 70 miles. Like, that's not far when you're looking at where you went to college, but it's far
it's an hour drive, at least.
Yeah. It's not just like, hey, can I have a ride to the bank or whatever? Like,
yeah. So if somebody is driving her from Eufaula to Montgomery, you know, that's a 2-hour trip.
Exactly, round trip, yeah.
And college students don't have a lot of money usually.
Like, yeah, for gas and things like that, absolutely.
Exactly. Or like, also this is over break, right?
Yeah.
So they're...
Or no, it's December 5th, so school would have been back in session.
Okay. So gas money and time are things that college students don't have a lot of.
Right.
So yeah, that would be a big deal to drive her back.
Yeah. I found this blog called Soapboxy, run by Jade Hassenplug, that gives a more detailed account of LaQuanta's background and circumstances leading up to her disappearance than other sources that I was able to find. And she drops in an interesting paragraph about LaQuanta's aunt Katie's house. She says, quote, "While living at her aunt's house, there was one major rule the girls had to follow, and that was no male visitors allowed. LaQuanta didn't like this rule and complained to her mother about it, but was told to follow the rule anyway," end quote. Which, I mean, that's the story of like literally every rule that a child is asked to follow. But yeah, again, it might mean nothing, but I did find that interesting.
Yeah. Why did she bring that up?
I don't know, because like she kind of goes back and forth between like Katie's house and her mom's house in those last couple days. So, and December 5th, Katie is out of town in Stone Mountain, Georgia. So I'm wondering if LaQuanta could have maybe skirted this rule in her aunt's absence, like perhaps with the person who came to Eufaula and picked her up. But it apparently, whatever happened or didn't happen, it apparently led to a disagreement with her cousin. So like Katie's son. Mm-hmm. On December 7th, but, you know, Aunt Katie heard about this. She's still in Georgia. She heard about this, like, disagreement that LaQuanta and her son had. And, you know, she just told LaQuanta not to worry about it. So that's another argument that happened right before she disappeared.
Right.
But again, it doesn't sound like it was some sort of huge, you know, devastating. Blow. Like, yeah, at all. And other than that, December 7th was pretty normal. The family had a tradition of choosing Christmas outfits, so that was a big topic of conversation that day. But it does seem like LaQuanta did have someone she wanted to hang out with, as was evidenced not only by that argument regarding male visitors, but by what happened later that night. At about 11:30 p.m., someone picked LaQuanta up from her aunt's house. They then drove to Pam's house, which, as I mentioned, was just 3 miles away. Uh-huh. And LaQuanta went inside while the driver of the car just like waited in the car. She apparently stopped by to grab a jacket. Though it had been in the 50s that day, the temperature had dipped to just 31 degrees that night. So when she arrives over at her mom's house, LaQuanta's brother answers the door. He saw the car waiting for her outside, which was a dark green sedan, possibly a Ford Taurus or a Chevy Caprice.
Okay.
And her brother didn't recognize the vehicle. So, you know, he was like, who is this? Like, it's 11:30 at night. And I mean, she was 19. Like, she was an adult. She wasn't some like 14-year-old out.
Right. Yeah.
But still, he was just like, all right, like, who's this in the car? Like, I don't know this person. What's going on? And she didn't give him a name and said it was just a friend from the neighborhood. So she grabbed her jacket, like, and took off. But she never came back. So here's the problem that we run into so often in cases like this, where a missing person is kind of bouncing around from place to place. No one immediately realizes she's missing. Uh-huh. In 2003, cell phones were certainly around, but they weren't ubiquitous like they are now. Like, I've had a cell phone since 1999, but like, didn't you say in an earlier episode or something when we were talking about this that you didn't even have one until after college?
Yeah, 2003 was the first year that I had one.
Yeah, that's so weird. But yeah, so anyway, so it's I mean, I think it's weird, but whatever. I mean,
and she's not that much younger than us.
No, exactly. And she was still in college.
Right.
So like, you know, and as you mentioned, college kids don't really have a lot of money and cell phones were expensive.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, so certainly in 2003, like not everyone in our kind of age group had cell phones by any means. But either way, the point is that people weren't in constant contact like right. they are today. And it sounds like LaQuanta's aunt was still out of town. So it wasn't until 3 days later that Pam, LaQuanta's mother, reported her missing and found something disturbing that her daughter had left behind. Her purse and her money.
Okay.
That stuck out to me. One, because... what is that, like the third missing adult story in a row that we've had where they've left all of their money behind? Well, yeah, I guess Mason Smith was 17. He wasn't quite an adult. But
still.
Yeah, it's like I can't wrap my mind around it because it's the absolute antithesis of my personality.
So I can see, you know, leaving – if you're leaving your past life behind to start over again – like, I can see leaving your purse, your wallet, those type of personal belongings because that links to your identity. The problem that I have in all of these cases is money.
Cash.
Yes. Cash does not link to anything.
Yeah.
So why would you leave cash sitting around when, if you were starting over again, presumably, you're going to need cash? Now, I don't know how much she had in her purse, but, like, why wouldn't she just grab the cash for spending money or whatever. You know, if you already have another life set up and you have a different bank account and you have money in that or whatever, just take the cash.
I know.
That's the part that always bugs me.
Yeah.
Everything else, the you know, your driver's license, everything that links to your past identity, if you are, you know, starting a new life. Yeah, I get that. Leave that there.
Also, if you look at it from a more benign perspective, I mean, meaning benign, like in regard to her intentions, not necessarily somebody else's intentions, but let's say that she wasn't planning on, you know, starting a new life, that she truly was just going to hang out with a friend.
Why wouldn't you take your purse?
Well, yeah, like she was obviously going out somewhere. And even if they weren't planning on going anywhere where she thought she would need money, like I personally, and this is why I'm like, it's so against my personality. Like I just cannot understand not having it with you. Like what if you need emergency cab fare because something got weird or, you know, just something benign, like you go out and decide randomly to grab a bite to eat.
Yeah.
Like right. I don't even go for a run without my license and a credit card.
Yeah.
Even though like I'm going for a 3-mile run in the neighborhood, I'm not stopping anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not doing anything.
But you never know.
You never know.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I never leave my house to go beyond the backyard without having like all of my stuff with me. All right. But back to LaQuanta. So her mom reports her missing around December 10th, but as you may have guessed, since we've already done this more than once, it doesn't seem like there's a huge investigation into the teen's disappearance. And to be fair, from the police's perspective, like, she was an adult. Right. She was 19. And her brother says that she left of her own volition with a friend. And as far as we know, she doesn't have, you know, any medical conditions or anything else that would put her in that endangered missing category.
Right.
So, like, you can kind of understand why police would be like, oh, okay, like, your 19-year-old daughter, like, left with presumably a dude and, you know, hasn't come back in a few days. Like, ooh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely understandable to kind of, I don't want to say blow it off, but mm-hmm. put it on the lesser end of the priority list.
Yeah, for sure. But with that said, it does seem like police did some sort of investigation. There just isn't a lot of information about the early days. I did find an article in the Montgomery Advertiser from September of 2004, so just a year after almost LaQuanta's disappearance, in which Montgomery Police Sergeant Scott Martino, a detective assigned to LaQuanta's case, said, quote, "We've come to the point now where we've talked to everyone. Right now, she's still considered missing, and we hope for the best. We hope that we'll find her alive and well," end quote. At this point...
So if we've talked to everybody, that means the former roommate, hopefully.
Hopefully.
That, where, you know, the start that had an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Family members.
Mm-hmm. Friends.
Friends.
Classmates. Yeah, neighbors.
Whoever they could get a hold of, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what I take that to mean, too. And so it doesn't shock me, and I don't think it's terrible that, like, there really wasn't a lot of media coverage surrounding this, because it does seem like they were doing an investigation at first. They were kind of, you know, talking presumably to everybody that they needed to be talking to. So there's not really, like, a whole lot to report there, because, again, we don't even know if a crime has taken place.
Yeah.
So basically, there was an investigation, though we don't know the details
right.
of it.
Yeah.
But the main reason that this was maybe taken a little more seriously than, like, other non-endangered missing adults, the phone call. Now, the timing of this phone call is unclear. Some reports say it happened 3 days after LaQuanta's disappearance, which, if that's true, it could have been the inciting incident that led Pam to report her missing. Other reports say that the phone call came weeks after her disappearance. But either way, it 100% made Pam believe that LaQuanta didn't just take off and, you know, decide to start a new life. Pam received a message on her answering machine, and it's important to note that this was a physical answering machine and okay. not a voicemail system, from someone who sounded like LaQuanta. According to Pam, the caller was upset and crying and said either, "Let me go home," or "Leave me alone." So that's bad enough, obviously.
Yeah.
But then there was a male voice in the background who said, "LaQuanta," and the call disconnected.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's...
Can you imagine? You're a mother and you get a phone call like that, a voicemail like that?
Yeah, and you said she didn't have a cell phone, so...
Well, I don't know if she had a cell phone or not.
She gets a hold of a phone,
mm-hmm.
whether it's hers or somebody else's.
Right. Or even a payphone.
Or even a payphone.
Yeah.
Calls her mom and doesn't get to say anything other than either "Leave me alone" or
"Let me go home."
"Let me go home." That's terrifying.
Yeah. Obviously, it sounds like this is like a muffled,
yeah.
unclear call, because her mom can't tell which of the two she said.
Yeah.
And so, and she's not even positive it's LaQuanta. But again, LaQuanta, not a super, like, common name.
Yeah.
And so when that guy says
she
it.
She clearly hears the guy say
yes.
LaQuanta. Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming she turned that over to police.
Yeah. Pam told AL.com in 2014 that she notified police about the message and they made a recording of it.
Okay.
But here's what terrifies me about this. Pam listened to the message like over and over again. Yeah. I mean, as you can imagine, you're just like looking for any clues, trying to, you know, figure out what is going on. If there's anything you can learn from this, right? But at some point, she had a power outage and it was erased.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So the original's gone. Totally gone, not coming back. But like I said, police made a copy of it. However, in that same AL.com article, reporter Aaron Edgemon interviewed M. Dante Gordon, who is a former detective for the Montgomery Police. And he worked on LaQuanta's case for about 2 years, starting in 2005. So like 2 years after she went missing, it's already a cold case. And way after like this voicemail happened.
Yeah.
He said that he knew about the voicemail, but that it was never provided to him.
Hmm.
The voicemail has also never been shared publicly. So, like, you know what I'm thinking? I don't think that voicemail exists at all anymore.
But what happened to it? If the detective getting the cold case knew about the voicemail, that means it's documented there somewhere.
It's documented, but he had never heard it.
Huh.
So if 2 years later, that cold case detective hadn't heard the voicemail but knew about the voicemail, you got to think, like, he would be, hey, that's interesting. Why don't I take a little listen and see what I can figure out,
I'm sure he looked into what happened to it.
Yeah. And the fact that he worked on that case for 2 years and never heard the voicemail, I do not think that voicemail exists.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's absolutely horrifying because in a case like this with so little evidence, that was the one solid thing that they had.
Yeah.
Who was the man on the voicemail? Like, Pam didn't recognize his voice, but that doesn't mean that someone else in LaQuanta's life wouldn't. And maybe, you know, maybe Pam played, I'm sure she did, like, play that voicemail for, like, her family and, you know, and everybody. Yeah. But maybe somebody in LaQuanta's life who isn't necessarily in Pam's life would have known, you know, like maybe a friend of LaQuanta's would have recognized the voice, but maybe it's a friend that Pam doesn't know. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. And now with so much social media, so many different outlets that you could put it out on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I would love to be playing that voicemail right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just to see if anybody recognizes the voice or has any information from it. But not having that recording is just absolutely devastating. And like, I have to think that's what it is, because if Montgomery police still do have it and they just didn't let the investigative detective listen to it for some reason, like
what would be the point of that?
Exactly. And so like, maybe now is the time, you know, like maybe if you've been holding on to this for over 17 years, why don't you release it to the public and just see what you can kind of shake up?
You said this message was left on an actual answering machine. So this is a landline.
It's a landline, but keep in mind, so if we remember where we're dealing with, 2003, so we're in like a transitional technology period for answering machines. So we're past the tape, and now we're
digital answering machine. Yeah.
Well, so, honey, you got to understand, like a lot of people aren't as old as we are, so okay. I need to explain these things.
Yeah.
So what this is,
what is an actual answering machine?
Yeah, it's a physical digital recording. So the recording lives only within the answering machine. It's not, so it's different from the tape because there's no physical copy of it like there is with the tape.
Right.
And it's different from a current voicemail system because there's nothing in the cloud.
Right, yeah. What about phone records?
All I saw was that they weren't able to trace the call, but I don't know if that means that they were unable to trace it, they never tried to trace it, or what.
We're old enough that we had landlines, and we have seen phone bills.
Yeah.
And you can see calls on landlines.
Yeah.
Just going online to your account, you can get a list of phone calls, both sent and received.
Oh, I know.
And if a phone call was received,
it'll have the number.
Yeah. So if anything picks up, even an answering machine, because that answering machine is separate from the phone itself. So the phone would recognize it as the call being answered. So any length of time would show a phone number.
Right. I don't know. There's no information publicly available about that. All right, but back to this article and Detective Gordon. He says some more things in it that make me concerned about the investigation into LaQuanta's disappearance. He told AL.com, quote, "No one wanted to talk to us. No one wanted to cooperate with us. It was a missing persons case. It wasn't a criminal case. We couldn't make anyone talk to us," end quote. And to be clear, he seems to be referring to LaQuanta's acquaintances and like friends here, not her family.
Yeah.
Like maybe the roommate in Eufaula didn't have much to say or LaQuanta's friends. I don't know. But what I do know is that Pam has been advocating for her daughter tirelessly for nearly two decades. So there's a 0% chance that she wasn't doing everything in her power to assist with the police investigation.
Maybe her friends and acquaintances, you know, have a general mistrust of the police at this point. So who's investigating Montgomery police?
Uh-huh.
I mean, Montgomery, Alabama, there's a long history of, you know, racism within law enforcement there. So, I mean, maybe that has part of it.
Yeah, it very well could. We don't know. So we're just kind of forced to read between the lines here.
Yeah.
But it's what he says next that really concerns me in terms of the effort police put into this case. According to that article, quote, "Gordon said it wasn't ever clear to investigators whether LaQuanta made it back to Montgomery after asking family members to pick her up in Eufaula," end quote.
But I thought you said the brother saw her and identified a green or dark colored vehicle, either a Caprice or a Ford Taurus.
I did say that. Yeah, she went to Eufaula on December 5th. On December 7th, she went to her mother's house. Her brother saw her and spoke to her. So, like, are they saying that he's lying about that?
Yeah, how old?
They didn't say. All I know is that he's younger than LaQuanta because LaQuanta was the oldest. I do not know how old he was. But another possibility is that Detective Gordon simply misremembered the facts of the case.
Maybe.
Because, again, this article is from 2014 and, you know, who knows? But, like, is that it? Or did they really not look that hard into this? You know, I don't know. But whatever the answer is, it doesn't exactly instill me with a ton of confidence in this investigation. Because for me, like, if I'm a detective, and he's out of Montgomery police at this point. He was like a U.S. Marshal, actually. So he's out of the police. And so maybe he doesn't really remember the details of this case. But if a reporter contacts me and says, "Hey, I'm doing this big article about a case you investigated several years ago," I would read up and like refresh myself on the details so I don't sound like an idiot when I'm, interviewed.
Yeah. Well, he might not have access to any of that.
I would still call somebody and or say, "Listen, I don't have access to those notes, and like I don't feel comfortable talking about this," because we're not talking about minute little details.
Yeah,
that's a huge aspect of the case.
Yeah, I mean, that's the last known contact.
Yes,
and you have a suspect.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously you don't got know nothing who the to go suspect on, is, but you have a green car and two possible makes of the car.
Yeah.
It's not much to go on, but it gives you something.
So up to that point, you know, I'm reading about the investigation. I'm like, okay, well, they did one. You know, I get why this wasn't some huge, huge deal. She was an adult. She might have left on her own, da, da, da. But then I read this article and I'm like, oh my God, like, what did they even do here?
Maybe we're missing something.
I hope we're missing something, but I don't think we are, because Pam seems to agree with this kind of idea that they didn't do enough. According to that post I mentioned earlier in Soapboxy, Pam doesn't think that police did enough for her daughter. She also says that they didn't do basic things like, oh, check phone records, like you mentioned.
Yeah.
Or search her sister's home where LaQuanta was living at the time.
Or the former roommates then?
Yeah, I would assume. I mean, I can't imagine that they went to Eufaula 70 miles away and search that, but then didn't search the aunt's house 3 miles away.
Yeah.
But there were still plenty of tips that came in and were followed up on, including a chilling one that came out of LaQuanta's hometown of Stone Mountain, Georgia. I couldn't find any confirmation of when this lead occurred, but at some point, police discovered that someone with the name LaQuanta Riley was renting an apartment in Stone Mountain, Georgia. What's disturbing is that it's unclear whether police actually did follow up on this tip, but Pam drove to Stone Mountain to check it out on her own. She went to the apartment and spoke to the man who lived there. He claimed that he had been living there for the past 2 years. Pam showed the man a photo of LaQuanta, and he was like, oh yeah, like I know her. She lived down the hall. Apparently, LaQuanta had recently knocked on his door and asked to use the phone after getting into some sort of argument. So, like, at this point, Pam's like, okay, yay, my daughter's alive. Like, she's living down the hall. Like, I'm going to go knock on that door and I'm going to find her. But obviously, that doesn't happen. According to this man, LaQuanta had moved out of the apartment just a few days earlier.
She goes to this apartment that is supposedly rented by LaQuanta.
Uh-huh.
And a dude answers and says, yeah. No, she lives
down the hall.
Down the hall.
Oh, but whoops, she moved out 2 days ago. But she did come and use my phone, and she was upset.
And again, we don't know when that tip came in.
No.
So
we don't know if, like, this was right after she disappeared, and that could possibly be the phone call.
Right, yeah.
Or if this is, like, 5 years later.
Yeah.
But either way, this story is extremely shady.
Yeah, I mean, the guy said that he recognized her.
Right.
Like, so.
And so my fear is, like, is he saying that he recognized her and that she came in to use his phone in case police do come and, like, find her fingerprints somewhere or, like, a hair or DNA?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And he could say, oh, yeah, well, you know, she came and used the phone, like I told you.
Huh.
Yeah.
Do we know, did she ever get into the apartment? Did he let her in, or was all of this discussed out in the hallway?
It sounds like it was all kind of discussed out in the hallway.
Yeah, so we don't even know. Like, LaQuanta could have been in there.
Maybe. I have no idea. And that's, like, terrifying. Like, because, you know, there are a lot of things I want to know. One, who the hell is this guy? Two, did police ever talk to him? Three, is his story even legit?
Yeah.
Like, does he know more than he told Pam, or does he actually know less? Was the person who allegedly lived down the hall even LaQuanta?
Right.
Like, maybe this guy is 100% on the up and up telling the truth and was just like, oh, yeah, no, she lives down the hall. And it was just some other random lady.
Yeah.
And one thing that I didn't mention a few weeks ago in our Morgan Nick episode is that about a decade after her disappearance, her name popped up in a similar fashion. But it was just somebody who was attempting to steal her identity.
Yeah, and that is a possibility.
Right. So, like, could that be what happened here?
Well, it's worth investigating.
One would think. Pam says of this encounter, quote, I can't fathom her being there, end quote. But it's such a strange coincidence that the name LaQuanta Riley, which, again, not a common name, popped up in the same town where LaQuanta graduated high school.
Yeah. I'm dumbfounded. I mean, her mom knows about this, so presumably police know about this.
Oh, yes.
But why was this not followed up on?
I don't know. And so Detective Gordon confirmed that there was a match for that name in a database.
What database?
I don't know. He just said in a database. But he didn't know if it was someone actually using LaQuanta's identity.
So go and find out.
Right? Like, maybe look into that. I don't know.
What database?
I don't know. He was just like, oh, yeah. I feel like he's just like one of those dudes who just says words and expects you to be like, oh, yeah, you're a cop. Like, that's a real thing. But, like, it's not a real thing. What does that even mean?
Yeah, what?
There are a lot of databases out there.
Yeah. I mean, is it NCIC? Was this person arrested? And that's the database he's referring to? I can't for the life of me think of any other database that he would have access to being in Montgomery, Alabama,
right,
that would somehow link him to
Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Yeah.
They're not close, so they're not on like the same local police channels or whatever.
Like, that's a good point. So like you would have to think whatever he's referring to would be on a federal level, like NCIC.
Yeah. What database?
No, I have no idea. And his laissez-faire attitude regarding LaQuanta in this interview, like, drove me up the entire wall. So while he may or may not have looked into LaQuanta renting an apartment in Stone Mountain, Georgia after her disappearance, which, like, I definitely, my notes wrote down in all caps because, like, when I was writing this, my head was just exploding. Detective Gordon says that there were plenty of leads that they did look into. Apparently, someone called in a tip that LaQuanta was murdered and buried. Then, an inmate said that he saw LaQuanta being killed and tossed into Cooter's Pond in Prattville, which is about 12 miles away from Montgomery. But this man later said that he made up parts of his story. Like, parts? I don't know.
So, they're running down leads and investigating things that can close the case.
Right. Right? That's a really good point. Yeah.
They're not running down leads and investigating if she's still alive.
That really is an interesting perspective. And I didn't look at it that way when I was, you know, when I was reading this. But
maybe not close the case. I stand corrected because a murder obviously wouldn't close the case.
Sure.
But it would transfer it from a cold case missing person to a homicide, which means possibly another detective.
Exam. Yeah, I would get it off his desk either way, probably.
Just a thought.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think it is interesting that he is able to give all this information about tips that he ran down. But then going back, he says that, you know, there was never any evidence that she made it back from Eufaula. So, like, to me, that really does at this point say that, not that he was misremembering details of the case, that
he just contradicted himself then. Because he said there was never any evidence she made it back from Eufaula, but he's following down leads that she was murdered in Montgomery.
Well, I'm sure he would say he's, you know, looking at all possibilities.
Except for the possibility that she's alive
in Stone Mountain, friggin' Georgia. Yeah. I don't know. This guy was killing me. So that's, unfortunately, where we are in this investigation. A number of detectives have cycled in and out over the years with no real progress made. But Pam has been driven throughout this entire experience. She started the Riley Relief Foundation, a nonprofit that provides resources and support to families with missing children. They also distribute safety materials for kids. She also holds an annual candlelight vigil for not only her daughter, but for all of Alabama's missing. She told the NCMEC blog in 2018, quote, "The candlelight vigil is for us to be a voice for them. Out of sight does not mean out of mind," end quote. I don't know why, but that, like, that one quote, it really gets to me because she's just been fighting for so long. And Pam understands that her daughter's case isn't particularly unique. There are many other families dealing with her same pain, many who are right there in Montgomery, and she has worked tirelessly to keep the pressure on authorities and the media to not let these cases be forgotten. She even made a board with photos of Alabama's missing people and took it to the district attorney's office. She said, quote, "I figured if we put all the faces on the board, they would think this isn't just a crazy mom. This is real," end quote. And that's what I want to do with sharing this story. I want to help put the pressure on authorities and the public to continue looking into this case, because to me, there are still some avenues that absolutely need to be explored further. Number one, LaQuanta's roommate in Eufaula. It's unclear if police ever interviewed her or if they found out any information about either the original fight or what upset LaQuanta on December 5th when she went back to get her things.
Yeah, what upset her enough to move out in the first place?
Right. And then something something else upset her on the 5th. And right. so like she wanted to come home very quickly after she got there. And, you know, if police did interview her and did find this information out, they didn't share that with Pam because she says that her one regret was not wanting to pry too much into her daughter's life. So she, quote, never asked her what happened in Eufaula, end quote.
Yeah, but you're also only talking about what you said 2 days?
2 days before she went missing. And yeah so like, and I get it.
And
from
it's
Pan's,
the holidays. Right. And
well, I'm sure she didn't think it was that big of a deal. I mean, her daughter was a teenager. She got into right. a fight with another teenager. Like these things happen,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't usually change the course of your entire life.
Right.
And so this is one of those things where I get it. Like she didn't want to pry. She didn't want to be overbearing. You know, she just wanted to like let her daughter have her life. But
she probably assumed that she'd hear about it eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like when her daughter's ready to talk about it, she'll talk about it. They'll go over it, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just something that when something like this happens,
it haunts you.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Number two, in terms of avenues that I think still need to be explored, the car.
Yeah.
Who was driving the car? Who picked up LaQuanta that night? Was he actually somebody from the neighborhood, as LaQuanta told her brother? Like, was the neighborhood even interviewed? Like, did anybody know about this car?
Yeah, did they ask the brother to get specific about the vehicle? So you've got a Caprice or a Chevy Taurus. Those are two very different cars, and depending on the year of the model, might come to some sort of intersection as far mm-hmm. as body styles that may be confused. Was there anything unique about the car? Headlights missing, taillights out. You know, these are questions that should have been asked. Did you notice anything about the individual driving the car, or was it too dark? Probably too dark.
Probably it was 11:30 at night, so probably too dark. But and I have to, just based on the fact that he said a Ford Taurus or a Chevy Caprice, my guess is that like he was shown pictures of different cars because he probably initially was like, oh, it was a green four-door car. He was young. I don't know how old he was, but he was younger than LaQuanta, so he was presumably some sort of teenager. Mm-hmm. Maybe he knew a lot about cars, but I only know what a Ford Taurus looks like, and I could only identify a Ford Taurus because I used to like have one. You know, we called it the old man space bubble, but like I couldn't identify a Chevy Caprice to save my life.
So the reason why I'm talking about the body styles coming close is because Chevy Caprices.
Oh, they were cop cars, right?
There you go.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's why I knew that make and model.
Yeah. There was no way that you'd be able to say that you would say that a Ford Taurus was a police car or
right.
looked like a police car.
Yeah.
Because they did not look like the Crown Vics that were the Ford police car.
Right. And so like when I had the old man space bubble, it didn't look anything
was
like
that.
Was that
a late 90s model?
I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah. That did not look like a police car.
Right.
But the early 2000s one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know exactly the model you're talking about. My dad actually had one.
Yeah.
And it was his state police car.
The Taurus?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the Chevy Caprice is also police car. So maybe that's why, maybe, we don't know because we don't know what level he was he was questioned, but maybe that's why he was saying it was either a Taurus or a Caprice.
Right.
Because it looked like a police car.
That's interesting. So number three, as we already mentioned, the voicemail. Obviously, if a recording does still exist, like
why don't they have it?
Right. It needs to be made public, I think, at this point, right? Like
it's not gonna hurt.
I totally understand during an active investigation wanting to not make things public because you want to preserve the integrity of the investigation.
Yeah, but at this point, 17 years later? That's not evidence in a criminal case. It's you know, something that could potentially lead somewhere in a very cold case.
Exactly. And number four, that freaking apartment in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Like, who actually rented that apartment? Who is the man that Pam spoke to? What do other people who lived in the building at that time have to say? Were they ever interviewed? Did police even ever go to Stone Mountain, Georgia?
Right.
You know, to me, that apartment is one of the biggest issues in this case. I mean, that to me could hold potentially the key to the whole thing, or it could be somebody stealing her identity. Like, who knows?
Well, yeah, but at this point, it might be too late because we don't know when Pam went there.
Right. And if it was back, I mean, it could have been any time in the last 17 years. I mean, I think the article I read was in 2014, but still, like,
even if it
was 11 years later.
Even if it's as recent as 2013,
yeah,
when she did it, it's an apartment.
Right. They may have records, they may not.
Yeah.
People may live there, they may not.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
It's an apartment.
Right.
You sign a 1-year lease, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to renew it. So who knows how many people have lived there.
Mm-hmm. LaQuanta has been missing for over 17 years. Her case is certainly cold, but there are things that can still be done in this investigation. And I would love to hear from Montgomery police, maybe not every detail, like, again, I get that, but some concrete information about the steps they are taking currently to help solve this case. Because Pam still believes that her daughter is out there somewhere, and it is time for her to get some answers.
It's not going to hurt anything to make some of this information public at this point.
Yeah.
You know, again, you're not investigating a homicide at this point. You don't know what happened to her. So letting certain information out to the general public, like you said, if you have that phone call recorded,
mm-hmm.
let it out. If you actually went to that apartment and investigated, you don't have to tell us what was said, but put it out that you investigated.
Right.
It's not going to hurt. Because right now, the way the case is presented, you look like you didn't do much.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, so if I'm wrong about that, if we are wrong and they did this stellar investigation and they just kept it behind the scenes and they didn't make things public because of whatever, then tell me I'm wrong. I am fine with being wrong. I will record like a whole other episode talking about how wrong I am. Pam and the rest of LaQuanta's family deserve to know that people in the Montgomery Police Department still care about LaQuanta. And Pam herself has said that she doesn't think that they do. So that is what we need from Montgomery Police. We need Montgomery Police to stand up and say, yes, this case is hard. Missing adult cases are difficult and they are hard to find answers for, but we are trying. Like, these are the steps that we are taking. These are the resources we are dedicated to finding her. Every family of a missing person deserves that. And I sincerely hope that getting LaQuanta's story out there a little bit more will at least bring that to Pam and the rest of LaQuanta's family.
We say this every time there's a possibility that somebody left on their own volition to start a new life. LaQuanta, mm-hmm. if you're out there, or if anybody knows where LaQuanta is, she's an adult. She didn't break any laws. Just make that phone call. Let somebody know, you know what? I'm okay. Sorry about this, but I needed to leave. But give your family that closure.
LaQuanta Nichelle Riley went missing from Montgomery, Alabama on December 7th, 2003. She is a black female with black hair and brown eyes. At the time of her disappearance, she was 19 years old, 5'8" tall, and weighed approximately 200 pounds. She had "Rest in Peace, Misha" tattooed on her left bicep and LaQuanta tattooed on her right bicep. She was last seen getting into a dark green sedan that could have either been a Ford Taurus or a Chevy Caprice. LaQuanta would be 37 years old today. If you have any information about LaQuanta's disappearance, please contact the Montgomery Police at 334-241-2350. Or you can submit an anonymous tip to Secret Witness at 334-262-4000. There is currently a $15,000 reward being offered for information in this case. You can see all of the sources for this episode, along with photos and video, on our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod, on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we want to hear from you. You can also leave us a message at the link in our show notes, and we may play it on a future episode. We'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains May 2nd through the 12th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
At Ritual, Mother's Day is kind of a big deal, and we're celebrating accordingly. Find your ritual. If mom needs a bit of stress relief, digestive support, or is looking to support glowy, smooth skin, do it today with 40% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/podcast. That's ritual.com/podcast for 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.